If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
All right, thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is a Tuesday afternoon. I heard, Ryan, that Kim Gordon had that story about Chipotle and the fact now that they've got another situation with food illness. It doesn't seem to be the same related on the West Coast, right? But still, it's a problem for Chipotle these days. John Najarian is on the phone line now from CNBC. You know him from Option Monster as well. John Najarian, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Stephen, great to be with you. We just finished up at the New York Stock Exchange, so thanks for taking me a little late.
That's all right. Always good to have you here. Now, we were just talking a little bit about Chipotle and the fact that they've got another bit of a problem with foodborne illness. And how are they doing today on Wall Street? Is that the sort of thing that would infect them?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it each time that they've had either an E. coli, which this appears not to be, by the way.
Right.
Just had some people on from the company saying that they thought it might be more of a rotavirus from perhaps somebody that was ill at the line. In other words, one of the people that prepped the food. Just as bad for the stock, however. The stock did hit a new low this morning, trading down almost to the 52-week low, which was $515 a share, traded down to about $520 this morning, and now it's at $535. So it's made a $15 rebound, but it's still down 3% on the day.
All right, John, explain that to me, right? Because when I get investment advice, they say you're investing for the long term and all of that. The fact that several dozen people, it's not a good thing for the company, but the fact that several dozen people got sick at a restaurant probably doesn't have a long-term impact on Chipotle. So why do they suffer so instantly on Wall Street?
I think people are concerned each time with each occurrence, no matter where it is in the chain, that something, the last one I believe was up in Seattle, this one, of course, in Boston, people are worried that, well, is this something symptomatic, number one, of using non-genetically modified food product, which is what they advertise, of course, and I believe what they deliver, so I'm not alleging anything.
Right.
But also, whether or not the food costs are going to change pretty dramatically. And in fact, this time, they indicated that perhaps there will be less margin, bottom line profit, if you will, going forward because of additional steps that they will have to take, I imagine, Steve, in additional washing or anything else for primarily leafy lettuce and the like that they use in the product, might even extend down to the onions as well.
So I didn't think of that, John, but there are some concerns of the fact that they're using all these all-natural products, that could, even if it's not leading to it, create a little more trouble for them?
Yep, that was some of the concern, and obviously with the stock, Stephen, back in August, beginning of August, this stock was $758 a share. As I said just moments ago, it was $520 this morning. So that is a drop of $230. That is a huge dip for a stock, and that's why the stock is down some 22% year to date, but down far more from the 52-week high, which, like I say, was just back in August.
Oh,
so I think they'll address it, but nonetheless, this is creating some turbulence in that stock.
Speaking of huge dips, oil is up a little bit today, but where are we now, 30, 37 and change per barrel?
Yeah. There was, a pretty significant sell program. For your viewers or listeners that don't follow it as closely as you and I might, Steve, that means that there were a number of hedge funds that were in contracts tied to the price of West Texas Intermediate that dumped out of those contracts very rapidly once we broke the August 24th lows for crude oil. That sent us to new lows, of course, as you might imagine, but we did rebound pretty quickly from those lows. The question is, how long do we stay above, and do we retest those lows in the near term? Certainly, there's nothing that OPEC's done that would tell us that the bottom or a bounce is anything more than just that, a short-term bounce rather than a tradable bottom.
Well, low oil prices are nice if you're filling up your car. I did that yesterday, and I did it for somewhere in the 20s, which felt very good. But it gets to a point where terribly low oil prices can be bad for us as well, correct?
Right. In particular, it's bad for us if indeed its consumption is the reason. In other words, if emerging economies and or our own economy isn't buying it because we're cutting back. That doesn't appear to be the case. This appears to be a production problem. In other words, we've got too much supply rather than people saying, I just don't want crude oil. I think it's basically the demand side is pretty constant and growing, although growing at a slower pace, but it's the supply. And supply and demand are, other than fear and greed, what drives markets. So the fact that we've got an oversupply means we need to work through that. But overall, one of the big takeaways, I think, Stephen, is that it's fallen to about 6.5% of the impact on the S&P 500 as a sector, energy, that is. It used to be up closer to 12.5%. In other words, it's about half of where it was in 2008,
wow,
when, of course, we peaked up at $140 for crude oil. Now that we're down here at basically 37, as you say, I think it'll have less of an impact on the S&P 500, but a positive impact both on consumers and on many of the companies that rely on their product being delivered by fossil fuel powered vehicles.
Well, I'm assuming Halliburton isn't your stock pick for today. What do you have for us?
Well, today it is actually an energy stock.
Oh, no
I was buying some Suncor. SU is the symbol there for Suncor. Was buying that today because it, like many of these stocks, got down to some very low levels. We were buying it today basically at about $25, and it has made a little bit of a pop. It's back up to $25.76 today, and I believe this is a value level for that stock, for Suncor Energy, symbol S like Sierra, U like Uniform. I'm buying the stock basically at about a 20% discount to where it opened the year, and I think that in January will look really good. The question is, between now and January, Stephen, will I get a lot of phone calls from people asking me, John, why did you buy that stock?
We're pulling for you, John. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
I appreciate that, sir. Thank you.
John Najarian, and you can follow him on Twitter at Option Monster, and of course, watch him on CNBC as well. It is 12:23. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon, and Andrew Herman is here from DNA Info Chicago. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve.
Yun Tai, producer there, was just playing a little Beatles, and mm-hmm. I don't think he knew. We're going to start with talk. Did you know, Yun, we're going to talk about the Beatles?
I did not.
See that? The guy is clairvoyant. So Ludwig Drums, I did not realize this, but Ludwig Drums, based in Chicago,
yeah,
and usually come by and do openings and closings. Well, word is that Ludwig Drums has been closed for quite some time.
Yeah, yeah, they closed in the mid-80s, but they did have a factory in Bucktown at 1728 North Damon. So evidently, it's now a condo building.
But, really?
For many years, they made Ludwig drums there, including the drums that Ringo Starr has played and still plays.
I love the fact that the owner of the company didn't know that was happening. He's watching the Ed Sullivan Show in the 60s and sees the Beatles, and there it says Ludwig on the front.
Yeah, yeah, and the company itself at the time didn't put their own name on the drums. They thought it was sort of pretentious or whatever, you know. But the drums were being sold in England, and the dealer in England put Ludwig drums on the front, sort of to distinguish them as, you know, special drums.
He was so proud they were being imported, right?
And Ringo Starr came in one day looking for a new set of drums. He bought this set of drums. I think it's called a Black Pearl Oyster mm-hmm. set of drums, and made Ludwig super famous. And a set of drums that Ringo used in May of 63 through February of 64 went on auction over the weekend and got a $2.2 million sale price.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
So Ludwig Drums from Bucktown, or
yeah,
Wicker Park,
right,
Bucktown,
right.
Mm-hmm. And they're closed, but ended up selling for $2.2 million, and they went
right
to John Irsay, right, the owner of the Colts.
Yeah, he was evidently now has an instrument from each of the four Beatles. So
and apparently too much money.
Ludwig drums are now made in North Carolina, but still kind of associated with Chicago.
All right, let's talk about more current businesses now. And we have I don't even know who it is, but we have a new theater that has opened up not too far from me in Vernon Hills in the mall there. And it's
yeah.
one of these, you know, recliners, stadium sorts of And I think it costs a little bit more. Don't they cost a little more?
Yeah, I was at one in Schaumburg recently, and I think we might have paid $13, $14 a ticket.
So I went, and I'm like, wow, I had no idea, really. And we left like, this is great. I'm going to do this all the time. I haven't been back. It's not worth it to me. But there's one opening now, finally, in Block 37.
Yeah, 108 North State, an AMC dine-in theater. So it's kind of a high-end theater, like you were saying there. It has a bar. It has a menu. You know, you can get burgers and fish and chips and quesadillas. And you order from your seat. You push a button, and a waiter or waitress comes and takes your order and brings your food, but I got to say, it's these power leather recliners that are the real attraction.
You almost sit in your own suite, right? Because no one can walk in front of you. And
yeah, they are great. You know, you don't have to fight for the armrest because each one has its own armrest. They're in pairs of two and three, so you have lots of room. My wife and I were at one in Schaumburg a couple weeks ago, and I think the entire theater had like 65 seats in it.
So, and you can pick your seats at the one I'm at, where you when you buy a ticket, you choose your seat.
Right, before you get in there, and it's a fantastic movie-going experience. Normally when I go to the movies, I feel like I have to get up halfway through because I'm sort of uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I just melted into the seat. I was going to stay for the movie again. It was so comfortable.
I have to say, too, I don't remember the film we saw, but I remembered a high school couple was really enjoying sharing the recliner.
Really?
not too far away. Oh. All right, so I was at Latinicity in Block 37 last week and loved that place. And now, so this theater's coming there.
Yeah.
And they're coming just in time for a pretty big title, right?
Yeah, December 17th, so that must mean Star Wars. So, over Latinicity, they have the seats, I think, sitting out. I don't know if you noticed when you were over there at Block 37, they have an example of
seats. Oh, I walked right by.
Yeah, you find people just sitting in there staring at the wall because they're so comfortable.
That's Andrew Herman, senior editor at DNA Info Chicago. You can read a lot more there. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Okay, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is 12:36 on this Tuesday afternoon. Suzanne Mushin is here, co-host of The Big Payoff, that you can subscribe to and listen to at WGNplus.com. Suzanne, welcome.
Hey, Steve.
So let's talk. We usually talk about women in business and issues such as that. And let's go straight to the C-suite, right? The CEO.
Let's go. There's two women in the news, but let's start with the local one, right?
Janet Foudy.
Yes. So she's been recently named the CEO of Deloitte Consulting, right? One of the big box consulting firms. There's Bain, there's McKinsey, BCG. She is the only woman right now serving in a position of that rank, mm-hmm, CEO at one of these big firms.
Okay.
And what I loved, two things I really loved about her announcement. The first is that they were so clear that they were excited that she was a woman. Like, they made that point. And, you know, it would be interesting to live in a world in which that was not a data point, right? Where we just said she's our new CEO, not, you know, can you imagine saying, you know, we just hired this guy named Bob and he's a male and we're super excited.
And we've got one of 652 male CEOs.
Well, this is the other interesting and fun fact about this story. So I think you and I have even talked about this data point before from the Glass Ceiling Index that says for every female executive of one of the S&P 1500 firms, for every single one, there are four who are either named John, Robert, William, or James. Jim's included in that. So I feel like Janet just brought that thing crashing down.
So she replaces Jim Moffitt.
She does.
Janet Foudy then equals the numbers a little bit.
I think she might equal the numbers. Look, it's a great thing. Whenever I think you have a business sector like consulting that is considered on its surface predominantly male, to see a woman rise to the C-suite is always a good thing.
All right, so that one's up. Let's go into the negative territory and Melissa Mayer.
Marissa. I feel bad because I've
Yahoo?
Been a big fan of Marissa's for a long time.
You have not.
I have. Look, she made a bunch of controversial decisions, which we know, right? The decision to not allow her workers to work at home remotely. That didn't go over so
well.
That
was early on, right? Right
after
she got started.
Like right away. And then her 2-week maternity leave, which you and I have talked about. That said, I did think that she was really making things happen there. I did. She bought Tumblr. That was a big purchase. But word on the street is that she's going to get fired this week at their board meeting. I believe she will, because I can't imagine they wouldn't be crashing this news story if it wasn't the case. But here's the fun fact about that. Let's not feel bad for her. Do you know why?
Well, if she's the CEO of a major company and she's going to be fired and shamed, and she'll probably go home with $100 million.
Let's try 158.
Really?
158. I mean, that's insane. That's for doing a bad job.
Right, exactly.
How is that okay? Female, male, etc. There is something absolutely... She was 36 when she was hired. I mean, this is a young woman who has a great career ahead of her. She came out of Google, $158 million.
So what has she done badly, do you know?
I think that nothing has really fundamentally changed at Yahoo. I mean, their home screen is still a hot mess. I don't know anyone who uses Yahoo as their search engine. Do you?
No.
It feels so 1980s to me.
Well, we talk a lot here about work culture and all of that, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked at her very closely, but it seems to me like it's probably not a very friendly work culture.
I couldn't agree more. You don't hear people talking the way they would talk about working at Google or other places where the culture is really celebrated. Yahoo seems not so fun.
Another thing that came out, I think it was last week, Ash Carter, the defense secretary, said, yeah. And I don't know exactly what's new about this. I thought we knew this was coming, but that women now will be in every combat role in the U.S. military.
Right. I think we saw it coming. This was the formal announcement
okay.
of it. Now, absent from that was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, right? It was a sort of
you
iffy
mean,
press
Carter,
conference.
Carter makes the announcement and the Joint Chiefs isn't standing beside
him. Isn't standing. So it was a somewhat iffy announcement, although a lot of people made big news about it. A lot of people came out against it. Senator John McCain was quick to say that he doesn't think this is a good idea. You want to know what I think?
Well, okay, let me just predict, just so everyone knows, Suzanne mm-hmm. sends me notes the night before.
I do, because I'm that kind of co-host.
And I appreciate it. And so I'm looking last night, reading over these notes, talking to my wife, and I said, mm-hmm. you know, the thing about Suzanne that I like is I can never really quite figure out where she's going to be. So you point out that other countries, Israel, Canada, several European countries have women in combat.
Right.
You also point out that more women have been injured in training than men while carrying heavy weapons.
I did, yeah.
And you say it's also true that certain countries would have a cultural conflict with fighting alongside women.
Correct.
I am going to say you think women in every combat position for the U.S. military is not a good idea.
That was good, Steve.
Thank
See
you.
How we're getting this?
I know.
There isn't real pattern recognition to my opinions, but this one you nailed. I actually don't think this is a good idea. And for the simple fact that we have to prioritize security, period. And if it's true, if there's even one small data point to prove that there would be any, whether it means that men who could be more effective are uncomfortable because they're alongside women. And I that sounds very awful, but I'm
it
saying
does sound awful.
Not when it comes to national security. There are lots of things. If it were men not wanting to work alongside women at a cash register or at Nordstrom, I wouldn't care. We're talking about people on the front lines of combat.
What about straight men not wanting to be in combat with gay men?
This isn't to me about gender issues and sexuality. It is about you need to trust the person to your right or left without blinking. So for me, it is men and women are physiologically different. I think there are certain combat positions that may in fact be, I'm not a military expert, but to say all combat roles are
there's
open to women.
There's another thing we have in common, Suzanne.
That neither of us are military
right,
experts.
Right. True. So let's debate it.
So what do you think?
I am assuming that they're not going to put someone in a position of combat who's not qualified and prepared to be there.
True. So, they'll have to pass the same standards.
So
that's
that if
true.
She goes through the training and mm-hmm. is deemed by her commanding officer to be ready to be in there.
Yes.
I don't have an issue with it at all.
Really?
Right.
Look at how this turned out.
We just switched skirts.
We just switched skirts. I think we're at a moment in our country right now where things are getting turned upside down when it comes to security. Things we couldn't have even imagined a year or two ago in terms of compromising
okay, but you're
our
all about
confidence.
You're all about intuition and all of that
yep.
and, you know, having a different mindset at the corporate level
yes.
and, you know, at the retail level or wherever. So why doesn't that serve here?
I think that's a great point. My understanding, and again, Let's say it again.
We are not
military experts. I do think that men and women are wired differently when it comes to threat and how they handle it. I would feel much better, given where we are in the world right now, if there were a long history of women on the front lines serving in all combat roles, keeping our countries more safe, the way there's that evidence in corporate America. There's no question that that's better for America. This is untested at a time where are we really willing to put something untested on the front line?
And see, from what I know of you and what I know of me, mm-hmm. the country would be much better off if you were defending it than me. So I don't think it has to do with...
I would be really good at telling people what to do.
Yeah, and I would be good at, you know, hiding and trying to find a place to go away.
Right.
So
that's how I feel. I'd rather it be a more limited decision. I would rather it be tested to the point where we are 100% sure that this doesn't affect in any way, case, or form.
Okay,
our
but
security.
So if your threshold is that there's ever one data point, that would hold us back from ever making any sort of movement towards social equality on anything.
No,
if you could
find
one thing.
Steve, I'm really specifically talking about the military, where our national safety, like my physical, your physical, our children's safety is on the line. And when I say one data point, I don't mean one woman who drops her gun.
Right.
I'm saying a data point that's been observed over time.
Suzanne Mushin, the co-host of The Big Payoff, and she's always full of surprises. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch. We're on 720 WGN.
Yeah.
It's 12:52. You're listening to The Business Lunch. Thanks very much to Dolly McCarthy there and to Ryan Burrow. Steve Alexander gave a report as well.
You're welcome.
I didn't thank you.
Oh, got me.
Yep, you're not even listening, are you? Scott Catoon is here. You know, earlier, Suzanne Mushin was... I did that because every day I say thanks to Steve, and then under his breath, he says, you're welcome, or thank you back, and it usually throws me off. So Scott Catoon is here. And Suzanne Mushin was in earlier, and she's the co-host of... the Big Factor on WGNplus.com. And Scott Catoon has a podcast there as well. It's called Tomorrow's Business Today. So I thought we'd kind of stay with the theme and talk to the podcaster. Scott, welcome to The Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you come to this through the company Tech Factor, right?
Yep. I own a company called Tech Factor. It's an innovation firm. We help a lot of enterprise companies as well as startup companies with their innovation construction process.
Well, tell me about that. What does that mean?
Yeah, so a lot of people believe that innovation is invention, and that's sort of like kind of taken on its own name. Innovation is really a process. It's something you can rely on. So what we try to do is help companies put the building blocks together. How do we plan on making money from this? What is the revenue stream? How does this work with our sales partners and channels? How does it impact the entire business? And more importantly, if it's successful, how do we grow upon it?
Well, so that's the thing. When I hear innovation, I tend to think of creativity. But it's really a lot more than just creativity. It's what you do with the creativity.
So the line that we like to use is with regard to creativity is innovation without execution is just ideation. And invention.
And that's a wonderful word, ideation.
It is. Ideation is my favorite word.
Is it? Yeah.
If I can get paid to ideate, it's the best thing ever. Just sit there and think.
If you can eat and ideate, it's even better.
It would be. Yeah, I don't even know how to. I was going to try to combo the word and it would have failed.
So. All right. So anyway, but the idea is, so innovation might be the creativity, or it starts with the kernel. And then
you want
what
to define
follows
the problem.
It is sort of nurturing it and all of
so
that.
So what we do is you go to a company. This is generally how it starts. Companies will call and say, hey, you know, we don't understand why we're having this problem. It could be a dip in sales. It could be anything. And generally speaking, to properly define what the problem is, normally that's just you're only looking at a symptom of it. So we define a problem that we want to solve. And we set out to solve it. And then we will have a bunch of big ideas that maybe not, could mm-hmm. address this problem. And that's your ideation stage. That's where process really starts to come in. How do we take advantage of resources and assets and knowledge and data and all this other stuff that we already have around us to capitalize and build a solution, a proper solution?
Okay, so how have things changed, or have they changed at all? Do we just have different words for them? Because I'm thinking in the 1950s and 60s, you know, people with ideas were going through the same stuff, but there weren't innovation labs and all of that.
Yep. So I think a big part of this is, it's really, you know, reframing, right? Rebranding. It's new names. You get the shun at the end of everything, and then all of a sudden it's more important. The reality is there's only two real big changes. One is the identification that open innovation, meaning not closed and not secrets and NDAs everywhere, actually has a much faster go to market. So the idea of I just read an article in Inc. about this. A great idea that you can have, unfortunately, is not something that only you can come up with. Millions of people come up with big ideas all the time. It's how they execute that big idea and bring it to market that is the killer.
And I think I've read, too, that the better ideas are the ones that aren't come upon by one person.
Exactly.
Or two.
And that, and well, and that, and I would say that the person who came up with that idea, where they really differentiate themselves, is a willingness to listen to others and work with others. I would rather, I'm at 1871 all the time. I would rather tell everybody I know who I think is smart and respect my idea. And if they tell me it's a terrible idea or they have some insight to help me out, you know, whatever.
And I think that's where it is different. I mean, so the blacksmith was put out of business by the car, took a long time. I think today things are much more concentrated in time frames. I mean, some of these big old companies can survive, but they've got to adapt quickly to things that are changing.
Well, yeah. I mean, to your point, you'll stick with the car. Tesla and Elon Musk, you know, he realized that the battery is obviously going to be the key to success for Tesla. And so he decided to start openly publishing what they've got in these batteries so that they can use resources that he doesn't have access to or people who are dreaming in their basement to help him come up with this. Because at the end of the day, as they say on my show a lot of times everywhere, a good tide rises all boats.
I like that. So you're making me think in a different way because I guess, you know, a lot of online information is like that. I mean, just Wikipedia, where everyone's contributing, everyone's sharing, and then everyone's benefiting. And it's kind of the way we're moving when it comes to corporate as well.
You can't fight it. So you might as well embrace it and try to take advantage.
Right.
I mean, really, you might as well just embrace it and try to take advantage because what you write down on a napkin, someone's going to steal, take a picture. It's on Instagram and 1,000 people are already doing it.
Scott Catoon is the host of Tomorrow's Business Today. You can check it out at WGMplus.com. Scott, I hope you'll come back. It was nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Business Lunch. We're on 720 WGN.